Listen up, this. The UBC Players Club is turning 100.
This isn't your GMA's celebration.
We're the oldest club on campus, and we think it's time to shake things up a little with two amazing shows.
YOLO!
You can find all the details on the Google or via the interweb at ubcplayersclub.com.
Respect your elders and come out and help us bring in a new century of amazing theater.
Hello, this is the recording artist Jay Arner, and you're listening to CITR.
Hello and welcome to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and you may be watching this on my YouTube channel or listening on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, where we broadcast from unceded Musqueam territory on the University of British Columbia campus, or you might be listening online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. And welcome to the show. Today we are speaking with Julia Aziz, and she is the author of Lessons of Labor, One Woman's Self-Discovery Through Birth and Motherhood. And I've been speaking with Julia just a few minutes before the show, and it really sounds like Julia is a helper of people. She is a facilitator, a writer, an advisor. She helps coaching people. She works with meditation and hospice work, through and through a helping-hearted person. Welcome to the show, Julia.
Thank you so much, Marie.
Thank you for being with us today. So your book, Lessons of Labor, what inspired you to write a book about the journey of bearing three children?
It really started right after my first baby was born. I was just blown away by not so much the physical pain of it. I mean, that was hugely, just a huge experience in and of itself, but just the emotional and mental and spiritual challenge and transformation of that experience and how it mirrored so much of my challenges in the rest of my life. And it felt truly like a rite of passage. And there was so much growth and loss and change in that time that I really wanted to kind of make meaning of it and connect to other women and men too in what we could learn from this experience, kind of as just sort of a human rite of passage.
And so just to be clear, obviously anytime a woman gives birth to a child, she becomes a mother, and that is a whole different stage of life and has so many different meanings and responsibilities. But this is specifically about the challenges and miracles of the act of birth.
Yeah, I mean, it's really about, I would say that the main theme has to do with surrender. It's about facing pain beyond one's imagination of what that is, and really more, even more so about uncertainty, just really not knowing what's going to happen, just kind of entering the unknown and having to go in there as prepared as possible, but really with an act of trust and surrender that you have the strength and the courage to go through it. And so I think those are part of what childbirth asks of a woman, but it's also in life in general what is asked of us in any kind of life challenge. So I see it as a metaphor, or can be used as a metaphor for the rest of life. So it's really, of course, childbirth is allowing the baby to come out, and there's the miracle of all that, but there's also what's going on inside of the woman, in her mind, in her heart, and the obstacles she comes up against in herself, in facing something that she can't control.
Julia, I'm curious, with childbirth being a metaphor for other aspects of your life, what would you say would be the closest thing to that feeling of uncertainty and fear?
I think it's come up in so many different ways. It's hard for me to think about what one experience would that relate to. I mean, in the book, what I do is I connect it to all kinds of different challenges, many of them in becoming a new mother, but really it can be anything. It could be the loss of somebody you love. It could be a big career change. It could be moving from one place to another, the breakup of a relationship. I had also, when I was about to write the book, there had been this other book that I had been sort of sitting inside me for a while. And this is a little bit different, but in doing a meditation retreat, like a 10-day meditation retreat where you're in silence and you're basically just sitting for hours on end, which in some ways sounds like it'd be simple, and how hard is that? But mentally, it's excruciating in many ways. And so another idea I had had was sort of this kind of the same way this book is laid out, of each day of the retreat as a kind of a metaphor for different challenges in life. And it's sort of what happens when you're kind of just faced with yourself, you know, like when you just come up against all the things that are your obstacles, that kind of meeting your control issues. And so for me, you know, I've had various life experiences where my control issues are ready, I'm all armed up. And I think that sometimes it takes kind of going through the fire and being wrecked a little bit to finally sort of, all right, this one's yours. I'm not in charge here, you know, and I'm going to let spirit lead me where I'm taken, because I certainly don't know what to do here.
It's some women, there are a lot of women that I especially imagine the first time they're going to have a child, they plan everything and they want to make sure that they control as much as possible, whether it's the hospital or a home birth or an epidural, all of that. And I don't have children myself, but I can imagine that, I mean, the baby's going to come when it is ready to come, and none of us have control over anything after that, really. We're just there to, the doctor is just there to guide the process, really. So what is that like to be, I mean, I just can only imagine the fear. I don't want children. I don't want to have that experience of childbirth, because I can imagine a fraction of what it must be like. So can you take us through some of those moments, like when you're having these realizations of, oh my gosh, I have no control right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the, especially with the first one, the biggest sort of shock to the system was that my body had a life of its own, just sort of like feeling this separation between the mind and body. And so I was just kind of watching my body do this thing, and it was doing what it was supposed to be doing, and it's having these contractions, and even moving around the way that I was moving around, it wasn't coming from my mind making choices of what to do. It was like my body doing these things, and yet my mind was like going on in its usual chatter about this and that and what it wanted and what it didn't want, and wanting to get on top of it. Like, I want to manage this situation so I can have some, so I won't feel this pain, or how can I make it better? And yet the body's just going to keep doing what it does. And nobody outside, no doctor or midwife or anyone, it's like the body and the baby are doing their thing. And I feel like that's truly what is always happening in life, but we as human beings get very caught up in our minds and think that we do have control over things and that we are making stuff happen, you know, instead of being part of something much larger that is all sort of connected. So for me, being in that first labor especially, I was wanting to just somehow make sense of it, or like know what was going to happen next, or how much longer is this going to take, or how can I make this pain better? And none of that was all just going on in there, but it had of no use to what was happening in my body. And in the second and third labors, somewhere along in the middle of the second labor, actually, with my second child, I finally sort of broke through something there and was able to realize that really I needed to just kind of have a gentle focus and let it happen, and that none of that was going to make it any better. So it was time to just drop it. And I feel like that's the big challenge of childbirth and of becoming a mother, but also in so many other parts of life, you know, is how do we just like acknowledge the body's wisdom and watch what we're sort of naturally led to, rather than kind of following the never-ending trail of our preferences and what we think is best, if that makes sense.
Totally, totally. It sounds like you went from trying to micromanage everything to just letting it go. And I'm curious, now that you've had these birth experiences, how has that changed your relationship with trusting your body?
I would say it definitely has changed my relationship with trusting my body, because, I mean, in some ways it felt like my body was foreign to me in that situation, because I was like, what is this doing here? You know, like, I'm not controlling this. But I feel like now I can recognize that, that intuition, the best way for me to hear it is through my body, you know, and that if I'm having sensations somewhere or pain, or, you know, I can have it a negative sensation or a positive one, but that the body is giving me a message of some sort, you know? And so being able to trust that, I feel like I'm more able to trust that my body will tell me something, and I don't need a doctor or someone outside of me to tell me what's true. And now when I go and I'm with some kind of, even an alternative healthcare professional, and they tell me things, it used to be that I would like immediately want to go follow what they said to do and make it all right. And now I more can tune in and be like, well, some of that's useful, but not all of that resonates. And so really what's most important is how that feels inside of me. That makes sense.
Definitely. And now you are hosting, facilitating meditation retreats, and I'm curious, at what point in your journey of motherhood did you start meditating?
That was much before motherhood. I first discovered Buddhism at 21, so that's 20 years ago now, and started learning how to meditate and kind of joining various groups and learning Eastern philosophy. And I took a year off from work when I was 25 and went to Asia to basically learn meditation in a culture that it came from. And so I spent a long time in Thailand and Nepal and traveled around a bit learning meditation. And so I started doing those retreats before becoming a mother, and everything sort of got slowed down with each child coming. But it's something that I've really come back to in recent years, in recognizing how important it is for me to really quiet my mind and get present.
And Julia, a whole part of Lessons of Labor is dedicated to the topic of miscarriage. And now in our society, women are waiting longer and longer to have children. And so miscarriage is a bit much more common, I think, than it has been in previous times. I don't know. But it just seems like it's quite a common occurrence, and understandably so devastating. How do you help women take some kind of positivity out of that experience?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if it's any more common, but I think it's finally starting to be talked about. Miscarriage is something, it was really important to me to include my experience of miscarriage in the book, because I feel like, you know, if anyone else dies, we have a funeral and there's sort of a community participation in that, but when a woman has a miscarriage, and sometimes even when there's a stillbirth, it's very isolating because it's just sort of you and maybe your partner and maybe a few family members that actually grieve that loss. But really there was a being growing inside, and the emotional attachment was already there. And so for me, I wasn't able to kind of make positive meaning out of it until a good amount of time had passed. But what I've found is it's been in my being able to reach out to other women going through that experience. That's what's made it meaningful for me, is realizing how much compassion someone needs in that. And there's hormonal fluctuations. I mean, you're pregnant and then you lose a pregnancy, and then there's the grief. And then there's this added piece of nobody really knows that you're grieving, and it's not something you can tell people about it maybe at first, but it stays for many women. It stays for a while, that feeling of loss, and not just the loss of a being, but the loss of a whole fantasy, a whole dream of what was going to happen. And so for me, what's made it more positive is when I've had friends or clients that have had that experience, being able to reach out to them and continue to kind of see how they're doing weeks past the experience. And also doing ritual, I think, is for me, is really helpful. Memorializing, making something out of that, you know, whether it's art or music or anything like that, just to kind of honor those, all the small losses in our lives, you know. I think it's, for me, that's a way to make any kind of loss have a more positive meaning to it.
Thank you. I'm just imagining what that must be like. And when you talk about the isolation and so many of the things that, unless you've been through that experience or been closely attached to someone who's grieving a miscarriage, you don't think about all of those additional pressures and that incredible grief process of what could have been for this child, because none of us on the outside have seen the child, know your hopes and dreams for what could have been. So how has your perspective changed now from maybe 20 years ago before you had children?
I think I didn't realize how heavy that grief would feel. You know, in some ways, I feel like I've always been, I don't know how to say this, but close to death in a certain way. Like it's been something that I've been sort of fascinated by, interested in, and felt a lot of just heart space for people dying or grieving. It's part of why I do hospice work. But I didn't realize, you know, it's like I said, it's when there's a human being, like a person there to bury, it's one thing, but I didn't realize that miscarriage would also carry so much heavy grief, and how that can alter relationships, both like the relationship with your partner, but also with friends, you know, because it's hard to... There are people in this world that, like, they see someone suffering and they go towards you, you know? And then there are people that's really difficult for them to be around. And so it changes relationships in that way, you know? You kind of see where people can show up for each other.
Well, we are speaking right now with Julia Aziz. And she is the author of Lessons of Labor. And if people want to learn more about your book or your retreats, where is the best place to get in touch with you?
I have a website, juliaaziz.com. So there's two A's there, juliaaziz.com.
Wonderful. And so let's talk about... Your publicist offered me some talking points, because unfortunately I wasn't able to read the whole book. I took some glances at it, and I'd really love to talk about how we try to get what we want And I think you mentioned a little bit about this, like in your first birth, you were trying to manage everything how you wanted to go, and shifting to learning from what comes forth.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's a shift that I am always sort of working with in life in general, you know. I think for a lot of us who are, you know, I can be very goal-oriented, like, this is the next thing, and I'm going to do this, and, you know, kind of, like, put my energy towards that. And I think that that's useful, and there's a place for that, but it definitely needs the balance with the acceptance piece of what's happening, and also that not all work in the world has to be fueled by my will, you know. Some of it can actually happen more effortlessly. And so, you know, in the book I talk about, for instance, with my second child, I had a home birth, and it was my first home birth, and I had chosen a midwife to work with, and she happened to be getting on an airplane, like, right when I went into labor. And we knew that she was going to be gone for, like, a day and a half at a conference, but I figured the chances of the baby being born that day were still small. It wasn't my due date, you know, it was in the range, but it was just a day and a half, but it was right then. And so a different midwife was her backup and came. And so my preference was that I'd have this woman that I had hired on purpose because she was the most experienced midwife in town, and it was my first home birth, and she was the one that I knew. And so that's what I wanted. But so then her partner came, who I had met before, and she ended up being probably the dearest to my heart, like, healthcare professional I've ever worked with. I mean, she was amazing and was just the right balance of giving me feedback, but really giving me space to kind of do it all on my own. And so that I just use that as an example of, you know, we think we know what's best and can get very caught up in that. And sometimes it's just, you really just don't, you know, and it's amazing what gifts can come when I can let go of what my preference is.
So I'm curious, Julia, at what point in that, because I can imagine I would be freaking out if my midwife or doctor, as I'm going into labor, I know they're away. At what point in that process did you consciously decide to let go?
Well, once she got there, and I felt safe with her being there, the labor ended up going really fast. So there was just, it was kind of like once she was actually in my presence and I recognized, like, okay, this is actually happening, then I was able to let go of the old idea and just do this thing that was actually happening. And it's kind of funny because I had different healthcare providers in each of my labors, and I didn't have my doctor that I had been working with in my first one at the hospital. I had a different midwife for my second one, and then in my third one, by the things were slow, and then they got so fast that the midwife walked in my front door and then caught the baby, so she wasn't actually there for the labor at all. So none of it ever, you know, I don't think any of it ever goes the way that we would plan out in our heads if we go.
Wow. No wonder you wrote a book after all of that. And so it almost sounds like it wasn't even a conscious decision of, okay, I'm just going to let this go. It was just, there wasn't really much choice in it, almost.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, that there isn't, when given no choice, you can keep resisting or you can surrender to it, you know, and I can put up a good fight of resistance, you know, like going in that, like, no, I don't want this, and going all the arguments of why it's not good, you know, but more and more it's basically, that's why this mindfulness piece to me is so important, is because when I can recognize that I'm doing that, it's so much easier than to be like, okay, back into the body, back into this moment. That's not helpful. That's just thoughts. That's just resistance. It's not really helping.
So it's interesting that Lessons of Labor is about birth, and you also do hospice work, which is helping people transition to through death. And I'm really curious to know more about your work in hospice and maybe some of the similarities and differences of the two, birth and death.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I keep noticing in working with the hospice patients is how vulnerable we are at the end of life, just so dependent. You know, I mean, by the end, it's really like it's the basic needs again of feeding and bathing and a place to sleep and touch, you know, and especially watching the caregivers. Like, I've just gotten to see these amazing caregivers of people who are dying, and some of them are family members and some of them are paid. I mean, it really varies, but the way the gentleness and just this careful attention that they give to somebody, and how much that reminds me of a kind of a mother with a newborn, you know, it's just complete vulnerability, and how difficult that is for adults at the end of their lives to go back. You know, this is such a struggle to let go of that independence. And and there's a similar, for me, there's a similar just deep peace in the room when somebody is that close, either a brand newborn baby, if you ever look at one of them, I mean, it's like there's something otherworldly about them. And I've seen the same thing when people are very close to death, this just like a thick silence. There's like more going on in there. You can just kind of feel it. And the work I do in hospice, I mean, in some ways is similar to what a midwife or a doula would do, because it's on-call work. So it's basically 24-hour shifts or like weeknight, like from 5 p.m. to 8 a.m. the next day. And it's kind of just death happens on its own timetable, just like birth. You know, you can't plan for it. You don't get to like set it all up the way you want it, and then it will happen that way. You know, it's like, you know, it's going to happen generally, but it could take a lot longer or shorter. And when it's happening, that's the time it's happening. So, you know, a lot of what I am doing is getting called out when somebody has just died or right before they die, or when they first sort of accept hospice care, which means that they've decided not to aggressively treat whatever disease it is anymore. It's a big shift for somebody to make.
And Julia, what is it specifically that you do there? What is your role in the hospice?
My role is a chaplain, but I'm ordained as an interfaith minister, so I work with different backgrounds, and really my passion is for working with people who are not necessarily religious, but still, you know, need some spiritual guidance or like sort of connection, especially at that time in their lives. So a lot of what I'm doing is listening, hearing stories of, you know, relationships that need to be healed and forgiveness and people's fears and that sort of thing. But also when it comes to going out to someone like right before they die or right after they die, a lot of it is doing blessings, praying with the family, really just sort of tuning into the spirit of that person and kind of helping them go with peace, and helping their family members. A lot of it is that as well, kind of recognize that this is really happening and be able to let go, and providing that kind of comfort.
So we are speaking right now with Julia Aziz. She's the author of Lessons of Labor, One Woman's Self-Discovery Through Birth and Motherhood. And you can find her at juliaaziz.com. And we're talking right now about her work as a chaplain in hospice. And I'm wondering, Julia, how do you take care of yourself? I can imagine that in addition to the wonderful rewards of making such a difference in people's lives, it must be awfully sad. How do you care of yourself?
It's very intense work. work. It's very intense work. And it's funny, like, I mean, in many ways, it's incredibly inspiring. I mean, I get to hear love stories, like, the whole time. I mean, really, that's, like, there's so much sadness and grief going on, but with so much gratitude for the person that's dying. I mean, I often will wonder if it's just, maybe everybody does this when someone's dying, they appreciate them so much, but I'm always so touched by the love that I hear people, whether it's someone's spouse or their sister or their best friend, you know, and just how much we touch each other is really beautiful. So a lot of it is very inspiring, but sometimes there's experiences that just like punch me in the gut, you know, and that's very difficult. So I find that I've been writing about it. Actually, that's been helping me a lot. I started after a shift the next day, I'll write about that. And that helps me to externalize it some, to kind of tell it as a story. So I'm not just still carrying it around in my body. And I also find that doing something physical is super important, whether it's getting in water or being outside in nature, something to kind of remind myself that I'm alive and I'm in a body, because it's being around that much death is very like down pulling. And I also feel like I did this work before having children also, but I could never do it full time. And I am in such awe of my coworkers that do it full time, because I really need a balance with things that are kind of light and playful and joyful in life to be able to come into that work and really be present and be able to be with people. But it would be very difficult for me to do that full time.
I can imagine. just hearing you talk about it and imagining what a day doing that must be like it makes me feel emotional. I'm curious what some of your lessons, or if there's a common thread of regret or appreciation in people who are, you meet that are at the end of their lives.
Yeah. I think appreciation is a big part of it, you know, like remembering to that this is really all we have, you know, and that it really will be gone someday, you know, and that everyone we love, we will lose, whether they go first or we do, you know. And so it's like we all know this, but it makes it very real. And so being around people that are going through that, just recognizing, like just looking and seeing like what does it mean to be alive, you know. Like right now for me, it's like I get to go out and do all these things. But at some point, you know, last time visited a 97-year-old woman in a nursing home who's just been lying in bed for a very, very long time, you know, and that's what life is right now. And so how can you, like, where can there still be meaning and beauty in that? And what I notice is, like, well, every day her son comes to visit her, and her son is asking us to visit every day because he wants to make sure that we're aware of how she's doing. And it's like, that is so touching, you know, to see this son, how much he cares for his mother, and, you know, how he's looking out for her in this such a vulnerable state, you know. And so a lot of what I am impressed with is just the way people will care for each other, you know, and that it's, even if it's not a family member, you know, like you don't have to have children for this to happen, you know. It's someone will come, you know. How does this happen, and how do people, the depths of someone's ability to care is really inspiring. I think they have the heart, the caregivers, the people that are actually, you know, turning someone to avoid bed sores or changing their clothes or trying to bathe someone who can't even move. Like, to me, they have the most important job. And in the end, like, that's, you could get rid of the chaplain and the nurse and the social, you know, like, we're all very important parts of the team, but who's actually there, like, with you in your, you know, with your body and, like, brushing your hair out of your eyes, you know? I mean, that is love, you know, showing up in that way for someone.
Wow, Julia, it sounds like you're just so surrounded by this need to surrender, whether it's through childbirth and having children, being a mother, or seeing people at the end of their lives where, again, they have no choice but to surrender if they can't move or take care of themselves. And that vulnerability, and that acceptance of not knowing.
Yeah.
We're coming close to the end of the show, and I'm curious if you want to say more about that not knowing.
Yeah, I find it really liberating, and partly I think why I surround myself with these experiences that require surrender is it's like I need that constant reminder because I have a good, you know, inner manager ready to take charge. But I find sometimes to just ask the question rather than trying to figure it out, you know, to just ask the question and then be open to receiving the answer, not knowing the answer, not like then feeding the answer to myself, but just putting the question out there and then going on with my day and seeing what shows up. Or saying when I'm getting really confused about something and, you know, trying to figure it out, just saying, I don't know. And I find that to be really liberating, you know, to just say, I don't know. And that could be the end of the sentence. There's nothing more to it, you know, and we'll see what happens from there. And really, more than anything, surrendering into letting go of the thought and just being in the body and realizing that there's always something there's some beauty somewhere, you know, there's some kind of magic happening somewhere, even in the most difficult of circumstances. And there's people that have been through horrible, horrible experiences that have been able to see that and have been teachers for us all, you know? And so just keeping an eye out for that, you know, where is the magic? That's been something I've been saying lately, like, you know, if I'm getting kind of like down in the doldrums of mundane life, you know, where's the magic right now in this moment? You know, the little flash of sunlight, you know, that sort of thing.
Well, that's one of the things I was going to ask you is the asking a question without needing to be hunting for an answer. And so it sounds like where is the magic is one of those questions. And I'm wondering, are there any other questions that you routinely ask yourself, whether it's throughout the day or?
Yeah, I'd say I've been, you know, the serenity prayer, turning that kind of into questions, sort of saying, if I'm kind of ruminating on something, saying, is there something I can do about this? If so, like, make a plan of action, go do it. And if not, then, okay, it's not in my wheelhouse. Like, I don't have to worry about it then. You know, and it's like just allowing worry to be prayer. You know, like, instead of going into negative thinking, just giving it up. So I would say, you know, the question is there something I can do? And then do it. And if not, then let it go. So, you know, like, I recently read something about the word forgiveness coming from this idea of giving way, to give way to something. So to just, in the letting go, it's not just like pushing away, it's just giving way, you know, like letting it go, not trying to like ungrasp the fist of it, just letting it go.
I'm really enjoying your calm energy. I can imagine that your clients in hospice really appreciate that, and the people who you help in your meditation retreats as well. I'm wondering where you'd like to take the last few minutes of the show. And while you're thinking about that, I'm just going to say again, we are speaking with Julia Aziz, and she is the author of Lessons of Labor, One Woman's Self-Discovery Through Birth and motherhood. And if you'd like to get in touch with her, learn more about the book or anything else that she's doing, you can go to her website, juliaaziz.com. So, Julia, what would you like to focus on for the last few minutes of the show?
I don't know so much about who your audience is, so I guess my question would be, I don't know, what would be of most use, do you think, to your listeners and viewers out there?
That's a good question. Well, letting go, everything that you've been talking about, I think, I mean, when we started the hour, you mentioned even men could benefit from this book. I kind of thought, oh, that's interesting. But now I see how, I guess it might take a little bit more putting himself in. But I mean, that I think that any human can relate to that need to let go and that pull to try and control. So I don't know if there's maybe a prayer or a way that you get grounded or something that you want to share with us, but I think that would probably be really beneficial if you'd like to share that.
Sure. I'd say for me, one of the main ways that I get grounded is to allow myself to pause. You know, it's like even right now when you said that, I don't have a ready-made answer. You know, I don't have like sound bites ready to go here. So just, you know, if we get stuck, instead of kind of just going inside and checking, you know, like checking in there, what is going on in here? You know, like where am I right now? And kind of locating myself in the body, like where can I feel actual presence, you know? And so I like to move fast. I'm generally kind of a fast moving person. And so it's a really important thing for me to do, to take time, whether it's in a conversation or in multitasking too many things, to just check in and see where am I right now? And just like, okay, really it only takes a moment. You know, sometimes I think like I need a whole weekend away to sort myself out, you know, and it's like, and all day long, it's like taking the little mini breaks, you know, taking a few breaths or just walking outside for 30 seconds, just feel the sunshine, you know, like slowing it down. I feel like this is a huge, it's hugely important for me, and I hope that is of some use to anyone else out there.
Absolutely. One of the things that I've been trying to do with this show, even though it's for radio in addition to we're recording this on YouTube right now, but I try to pause instead of just jumping into the next question to just take a moment and decide in that moment what I want to ask, rather than while you're talking, I'm planning out the next question, because then I'm not present for you. And I really appreciate how you allowed that pause, because sometimes people are uncomfortable with any silence and then they just start filling up and talking.
I think that's so true. It's also, I mean, that's what I've actually found in praying with people in the hospice, especially, is that I'll feel like, oh, I don't want other people to be uncomfortable with my silence. And I'm learning how to, just let that be. People might be a little uncomfortable for a while, but yeah, if you get really into the moment and receive it, then it's like the words can just come out. You might not even know what they're going to say, but that's like truly accessing intuition, you know, without having it all be planned out ahead of time. So I appreciate that. I think it takes getting used to. It's not the normal flow of conversation, but you get people's truth that way.
As you were sharing that, it came to mind the idea of stage presence, and having presence in the world and just having that willingness to show up unapologetically as you are without having to anxiously make sure everyone else is comfortable. And it's like, it's okay to be silent for a moment. Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely takes a courage to do that, especially in a public sort of setting. And I find that I need to really put my ego aside before anything like that. And just, I'll say a prayer before any kind of like a radio show or something like that to, please allow my words to be of some use to someone. May I share your heart medicine, and may there be inspiration. And I don't know what I'm going to say, but please give me the words to do that.
Wonderful. Well, it's been such a pleasure speaking with you, and I can feel a difference in my energy just speaking with you. So I know that this interview is going to help someone out there, hopefully more than one. but if you are interested in checking out Julia Aziz, you can go to juliaaziz.com. If you're watching on YouTube, I'll post the link to her website below. And again, the name of this book is Lessons of Labor, One Woman's Self-Discovery Through Birth and Motherhood. And Julia, before we say goodbye, is there anything that you'd like to close the show with?
I guess I'd just like to offer you my gratitude for having me on the show and for, having this platform for people to share their stories and their experiences. And just to anyone out there who's listening or watching, just that I hope you really access your own wisdom, and find what brings you joy and where you need to let go in life. I hope that brings you more space, more spaciousness, and more peace wherever you're able to do it, in any little or big moment.
Thank you so much, Julia. Again, we've been speaking with Julia Aziz. I'm Marie Bernard. This has been Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. And thank you so much for being with us today. Thank you to Julia, and thank you to you for watching or listening. We would love to hear from you, so please feel free to post your comments below, subscribe to this channel, or you can contact me if you're listening on the radio. You can contact me at my show, or my website, happyshow.ca, and of course, you can connect with Julia at Julia Aziz, that's AZIZ.com. Thank you so